This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Put on your dancing shoes and get ready to take the floor. We're talking about dance on movies today, movies on the radio. The art form has a long history in film, goes back into the 19th century, and that gives us plenty of movies to talk about. Classics like Singin' in the Rain and Swing Time have inspired modern dance films like La La Land and Silver Linings Playbook. And directors have tackled lots of styles, from ballet in Black Swan to disco in Saturday Night Fever. Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys are with us now. Marcia, a film professor at North Carolina State University and a National Humanities Center fellow. Laura is film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art and the curator of the Movie Diva series. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having
Thanks,
us.
Thanks, Frank.
We got a huge, huge response to this, Marcia. So clearly, what do you think it is about dance films?
So first off, there's musicals, there's dance films, there's obviously great overlap between them. But what I thought was interesting when we were looking at the different kinds of films that people called in about were how many of them had a dance scene in them or worked towards a climax that was a dance scene, or, you know, maybe it was just in the beginning, middle, I don't know, whatever. But that was not, like, the role that one scene played was so memorable. And as we go through the show today, I know people will be conjuring these scenes in their minds, because sometimes that dance scene really steals the show in some ways. So I think that the dance scenes in these films, they can range from the comic to just outright glorious and filled with emotion. They really create an impact on the viewer, as we'll see throughout the show.
And Laura, these two visual art forms in and of themselves, and they come together quite nicely, although not all. I mean, as you say, you almost have to stop the movie to do the amazing scene, the dance scene, in some cases.
Yes, that's true. But if you can get something that's so memorable that your audience is talking about it and revisits it, perhaps tries to imitate it, that's very good for your box office.
What else do you think accounts for this outpouring that we've had, do you think?
To dance is to live, Frank.
That's sad for me to hear, because, you know, I don't dance. I'm kinesthetic. Don't ask me. I am kinesthetically challenged, okay? But it does give me great empathy. I'll stop in a minute. It gives me great. So people say, oh, I can't speak in public. And I think, how could that be, you know, given my job? And then I think, oh, think about you dancing in public, Frank. And I have great empathy for people who have
You've
any kind
never
of fright.
Had a few drinks and gone out on the dance floor and not cared what people thought
about
you?
Yeah, but it's been more than a few drinks. It's, you know.
I have an answer to your question. I think that often the energy of a dance scene is so transporting. And, you know, dancing, it's not that we don't do it in our day-to-day lives, but, you know, it's not an ordinary thing for most people to do. And so when we see it on screen, especially if it's being framed as this important moment, I think just that energy, the motion, and, you know, in the 1890s, Thomas Edison, who was the first filmmaker in the United States, was filming these very short one-shot films of dancers, like the Serpentine Dance. And they're just these beautiful, you know, typically women, not always, but, you know, moving in these gorgeous costumes that went with their bodies on screen, and just the thrill of and the beauty of seeing motion, you know, that was there in the 1890s, and I think it's still with us today in just different forms.
Well, and there are also time capsules in that way, because it, reputedly the first film that was ever done with dance would have been, again, in the 1890s in Edison, but we think the Buffalo Dance and perhaps the Ghost Dance, both done by Sioux dancers, were captured by Edison. So, you know, in a way, these films also will be time capsules for us.
Right, that ethnographic value of study and preservation is certainly there from the start.
Well, let's go to the listeners and see what they thought.
Hello, this is Marianne Wasson from Raleigh. And the first movie that came to mind for film, you know, dance films was Top Hat, which I realize, because I'm a boomer, is may not be true for many other people if they think about dance films. Now, of course, I didn't see the movie in the 30s, but I think for many people my age, we first saw the Astaire Rogers films like if we were homesick from school and elementary school, and they would be on the TV afternoon matinee, and they'd be entertaining, and it'd be fun, but you didn't really think that much about them. And then years later, you see them again, for me especially, Top Hat, and you realize what a really excellent movie this is. Yes, there's the old line that, yes, Ginger Rogers had to do everything Fred Astaire did, but, backwards and in high heels. But Astaire and Rogers, you know, the interplay of them, but also, of course, the dancing. It is simply phenomenal.
Putting on my top hat, tying up my white tie, brushing off my tails. I'm dooting up my shirt front, putting in the shirt studs, polishing my nails.
There we go. Marianne Watson talking about her favorite dance movie, Top Hat, 1935, Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire.
Well, Fred Astaire made everything that he did looks so completely effortless, but yet somehow still accessible, because he was coming out of more of a social dance, ballroom dance tradition. I mean, you don't look at a ballet dancer and say, well, I could do that. But Fred Astaire gives the illusion that you two could be a part of the magic that he's creating.
And these RKO musicals in the 30s that Astaire and Rogers did together, so much of it, I mean, it's an illustration of seduction based on choreography, and it evolves over the course of the film, where they always have this separate dance, well, especially for Astaire, like what we just heard was a solo dance. And then they would have a challenge dance, and then they'd have this romantic dance, and in Top Hat, it's Cheek to Cheek, which is an incredibly gorgeous romantic number. It is hard not to be moved by this particular number. It's so elegant. It's so well executed. And of course, another aspect is the music, which Irving Berlin wrote the music for this film, and it has great wit and great beauty in as
well.
Great
American Songbook there.
Yep.
Just wonderful music.
All embedded in those films. Let's move on.
My name is Penny Taskoff, and I'm calling from Durham, North Carolina. And my favorite dance movie is Swing Time, a Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movie. I love the last dance that they do in the movie. They have beautiful costumes on. They have that big, shiny black dance floor that was so popular in the 30s dance movies. And their dance, there's no words said during the dance. No song is sung. It's the dancing is so expressive of what they're feeling, which is they're both going off to marry other people, but they love each other. And I believe this is the movie where Ginger Rogers did the last take and her feet were bleeding. And at the very end of the dance, she twirls away from him and walks off the stage, and he reclines or kind of leans into this very sad, longing position. I just think it's the most beautiful, expressive dance movie, and that's why it's my favorite.
The 1936 film Swing Time, one of the favorites here on Movies on the Radio.
Yeah, and it's not surprising that Astaire and Rogers would come up so much for this show, because they're simply, you know, some of the best. And I want to put a plug in for a number that, fortunately, now we can access these things on the internet. There's a scene from Follow the Fleet, Let's Face the Music and Dance, which is on the surface a very depressing Depression era, really song following up possible attempted suicide. But it is a gorgeous, gorgeous dance number. And part of what's so amazing about it is that it is shot in one unedited take from a certain point in the beginning of the number to the end. And Astaire was very insistent that they get this right, and that part of the beauty of it was also that it was not cut up into a bunch of short moments with flubs in between them, that they could do this whole dance, you know, without making a mistake.
This film is one of the few musicals in the AFI's top 100 films of all times. It's showing on Turner Classic Movies tonight at 8, but I would be remiss if I didn't point out that it also has a blackface number in it, Bojangles of Harlem, which is part of the agony of classic Hollywood, is that you have to deal with these kinds of issues as well.
Well, that in some ways takes us to this one, although not blackface. Let's listen.
My name is Laura Winley. I am from Durham, North Carolina, and I am a Lindy Hopper, and I'm here to talk about the 1941 film Hell's a Poppin', which features Whitey's Lindy Hoppers as a dance troupe and a performance in the film. Why is this seen important? Well, Whitey's Lindy Hoppers were dancers from the Savoy Ballroom in Harlem, and the Savoy Ballroom is where Lindy Hop originated. And Whitey's Lindy Hoppers, as coached by Herbert White, whose nickname was Whitey, were the best of the best Lindy Hoppers in Harlem. And when they were approached about doing Hell's a Poppin', they had already been in Hollywood films and had already toured with Ethel Waters and performed at the Cotton Club. And so they were very experienced performers at this point. But Hell's a Poppin' is important because it is the culmination of how great Lindy Hop can be in terms of the peak of its athleticism and artistry and impact. When you look at this scene in the film, it is jaw-droppingly incredible. And as someone who has been a Lindy Hopper since, I've been swing dancing since 1998 and Lindy Hopping since 2001, I can watch this clip over and over and over again, and the impact remains the same.
Hell's a Poppin' is the film, and again, this was not done in blackface. It was done. It is an incredible scene with the Lindy Hoppers.
Well, they are unfortunately forced to dress in these stereotypical costumes, where they're maids and cooks and all of that. But their artistry is so transcendent that you can completely overlook what Hollywood wanted them to do.
This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Tripping the Light Fantastic today with Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys. Dance movies on Movies on the Radio. I wonder what that means. Tripping the Light Fantastic. How
I
on earth could
the
that
question.
Mean dancing? Anyway, look, we've talked about the great dance team of Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, but of course there were other great dancers in cinema.
Of course, and I just want to mention one choreographer in particular from this time period, and that's Busby Berkeley, who worked with Warner Brothers on all of their choreography in their wonderful musicals of the 1930s, like Gold Diggers of 1933. And Berkeley is known for his mass choreography. Astaire and Rogers, it's the two of them. This is, 12, 20, 100, 150, often formations of women in almost like a military form. And they are extraordinarily beautiful, incredibly different, and very influential as well. So those are worth checking out for people who are interested.
And we should also mention the other great dancer of classic Hollywood, which is Gene Kelly, who brought a different kind of athleticism. He had more of a ballet background, but he really wanted to stretch the limits of what dance could be portrayed on screen.
Speaking of ballet.
Hi, I'm Jackson Cooper, and I'm calling from Seattle, Washington, and my pick is Michael Powell and Eric Pressburger's The Red Shoes. This is one of my favorite films because it's one of the very few films that portrays the creation of dance and the creation of a work of art in a dance film. Musical comedies always showed dance as being very effortless, but The Red Shoes shows that hard work and dedication must be put in to create dance.
Why do you want to dance?
Why do you want to live?
I don't know exactly why, but I must.
That's my answer, too.
This is a film that actually shows the process of art as sort of a backstage drama and the idea of control in dance, that paradox of art that you must totally be in control, but the best way to create art is to lose complete control, as we see in the central ballet of The Red Shoes.
The Red Shoes, a 1948 film based on the fairy tale of the same name by Hans Christian Andersen, talking about dance in the movies on the radio today.
Yeah, this is an extraordinarily gorgeous color film. The reds are so red. And as much as it is about beauty and creation, it is also about obsession and ambition and that darker side. And so this is Powell and Pressburger, one of the great British pair of directors. And it's just a magnificent film.
It's photographed by Jack Cardiff in this extremely intense Technicolor so that it's extremely stylized that really intensifies all the emotion.
And anyone who was a fan of Black Swan from a few years ago, this is an obvious antecedent film to that as well.
It raises the question, though, about how dance has actually pushed filmmakers to innovate. To what extent have they been forced to come up with new ways of making films to make the dance come alive?
Well, I do think, I mean, in this case, it's obviously the color is the star, but in the case of Busby Berkeley and Astaire and Rogers, and then we can see this later with Gene Kelly, the camera work has to be incredibly responsive. If you want to capture dance, I mean, you can't just do it from a really wide shot from far away. So you have to have a mobile camera if you want to really give people that experience of performance.
Yeah, and Fred Astaire, as you said earlier, I mean, was really demanding on directors. He choreographed those scenes and wanted them to be done in a single take. And therefore, yeah, you needed to have the technology to follow along. We weren't going to cut the best four takes together.
And that's right.
And the advantage of the studio system was everyone was under contract, so they had a massive amount of rehearsal time if they needed it, which is how they could do all of these numbers without any editing cuts.
Let's hear about My Sister Eileen.
I'm Dana Clutter, calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. I did consult a dancer before I talked about this. So the thing I'm talking about is the alley dance in the 1955 movie My Sister Eileen. One thing that I really love about this movie is that it is early Fosse, so early that you can only see like a little bit of the stuff that he is going to make into a great career, but it's these two guys doing a kind of dance-off in this alley over this same woman. And so he kind of does these like huge movements, these explosions of dance, and then he goes into these really small caricatures of like a hip movement or a shoulder, and it feels like it minimizes the aggression. Two men who eventually come to sort of dance the same steps, both waving their hats as if an acknowledgement that they are both real competitors.
From 1955, My Sister Eileen. By the way, we've got a lot of the scenes from these films on our Twitter and Instagram feeds. You can see those right now. Talk about this film.
Yeah, this dance is tremendous. The other dancer with Bob Fosse is Tommy Rahl. Why he didn't have a bigger Hollywood career, I don't know, because as great a dancer as Bob Fosse is, he really wanted to be a movie star. And this shows you why he wasn't. He's funny looking. His line readings are flat. He has no charisma on screen at all except when he's dancing. The movie is so heavy in that mid-century misogyny. I find it to be a very, very tough slog.
Yeah.
But that dance scene is really spectacular.
And it's funny, I watched this for the first time because of this show, and I'm, you know.
Same with me.
Yeah, I don't know how it had slipped through the cracks, but man, I will say this, and I am not an expert in dance, but I've seen a lot of musicals and, you know this period pretty well. There is no more recognizable choreographer than Bob Fosse.
That's right.
Even early Bob Fosse. Yeah. It is right there, those gestures and that all the stuff they do with the hats. It's really, it's thrilling to see a choreographer who is so original that what they're doing could not be done by anyone else.
Well, yeah. And I've always loved, in dance films especially, the scenes that always get me are the ones where, particularly if they're kind of working class, but it doesn't quite matter, that all the stuff in the room becomes a kind of a prop for the dance. So that you're not dancing around anything. You're going over the boxes and under them. You're flipping the chair and it's coming around. That kind of stuff has always been my favorite. Here's a film that many people have seen, I think.
Hi, this is Gloria Friedman. I'm calling from Ellicott City, Maryland. When I think about dance in film, I immediately think of West Side Story, which was one of my favorite movies growing up. I grew up in New York, and the danger, the excitement, that kind of tension of New York City is something that I could relate to as a kid growing up there. This riding the subways and my mother wanting me to go and me being afraid to go. And there was something, I'm sure, about that connected me to the movie, especially the dance scenes of the men in the gangs fighting one another, the dance-offs. And I really love the scene where the Sharks and the Jets are at the gym, or they're whoever that city leader is who's trying to get them all to play nice.
Boys to my right, girls to my left.
Not working out, but everything fades away as Maria and Tony come in from each side of the room.
Talking about West Side Story today in the State of Things, among others.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you asked people to like name one musical, this, you know, with heavy emphasis on dance, this is probably the one you would hear more often. I mean, the Jerome Robbins choreography is incredible, the way it mixes some conventional dancing with these much more realist and stylized. In some ways, I hadn't thought about this. My sister Eileen, you know, kind of takes it to the streets in that one big number involving all the men
conga
off the
line,
ship.
Yeah,
and that's kind of a predecessor to this, which is, I mean, a lot of dancing is in the streets, right. And it's, you know, engaging with trash cans, you know, and other right. things that are around. Right. So there are so many memorable numbers. This is something I watched over and over again as a kid. I can conjure up probably more dance scenes from this film than any other one. It was just a remarkable film.
Well, this is a time when a lot of Broadway musicals were transposed relatively faithfully to film, but the Jerome Robbins choreography is so distinctive, and when you think of the film, you do think of like the snapping yep. fingers and all of that. It's unusual that I think most people would have an image of the choreography from this movie, mm-hmm. so much so that as they're talking about reimagining it both on Broadway and in the new Steven Spielberg film, the fact that they're not using the Jerome Robbins choreography becomes a real flashpoint. So we'll see how that
yeah,
all works
we'll see
out.
How it goes.
Yeah, and yet who could remake that with that? I mean, what would be the point? So I would understand having to get away from it if
this is
bother.
So much of Hollywood, Marcia. What would be the point of remaking this?
Because we all want to learn to live together, the great melting pot. Could we have that dream again? I don't think so. Here we go.
My name is Diane Basner, and I'm calling from Montreal, Canada. And my pick for favorite dance movie is Flashdance, which I actually watched many years ago when I was pregnant with my daughter, Laura. And the reason I love that film so much was the energy of it. Jennifer Beal, the actress in it, plays this dancer who dances to her own style, but she wants to break into ballet. And in the meantime, she's just working really hard at it while she also works a job welding. She was a welder as well during the day. Anyways, I just love the toughness of her character, the fact that she just did things even if she was afraid, and I loved the passion of her dancing. And the music was very infectious. It just made me feel like dancing and being her.
Flashdance. Let's see, Diane, Montreal, daughter Laura. Could that be Laura Pelliser's mother?
Is it
yes.
possible?
Is it possible? It must be. It must be a caller from Montreal. Daughter Laura, Montreal. Got to be Laura Pelliser's mom. Has to be.
We put the dots together. It's such an interesting thing. Between like the late 70s and the early 80s, there were a bunch of these working class dancing films. Saturday Night Fever mm-hmm. Is the pioneer, as far as I know. Maybe there's something before it with John Travolta, of course. It's like disco dance. It's going to kind of liberate him from his, you know, kind of tough situation at home and work. And Flashdance, I mean, welder by day, exotic dancer by night, it might not be the most viable plot, aspiring ballet dancer, but that energy, again, I think it's exactly what she's talking about, what we were saying earlier in the show about the way that the performance of dance in these films kind of creates this sense of kind of joy and exhilaration. And who can ever forget that image that was on all the posters with the water coming down on stage and the chair dance during What a Feeling.
And there must be a supercut of all of the other people who imitated this. I have this idea that even Miss Piggy did that dance. Is that is that true?
Wow. If she didn't, she should.
By the way, for those of you who don't remember Laura Pelliser at the end of our credits, a former producer here on The State of Things and now with the WUNC digital team.
Yeah.
We all know that.
We all know that here. And you know, just another while we're on this subject of this time period, Footloose is another
one
of those films that's so important with Kevin Bacon, you know, moving to a town where dancing is illegal and having to like bust through. And he has kind of an analogous kind of solo barn dancing scene that is almost like the corollary to what Jennifer Beals does during her super sweaty rehearsal scene, although he has a little more clothes on.
Well, cultural reference is obviously an important point in all these films, is to ground you in the culture that we're trying to talk about and the norms. We heard from a listener just now who wrote in and said, I love Savion Glover sequences in Spike Lee's Bamboozle. Just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Huge part of how dance operates in film to serve the cultural commentary that Spike Lee is making about cultural appropriation.
Yeah,
It's a great one.
All those things are there, and there's more.
Ellen Davis from Chapel Hill. And the movie that I thought was just the best dance film ever was White Nights. And it has Mikhail Baryshnikov and the famous ballet dancer and Gregory Hines, the famous tap dancer. And they're both in Russia because Baryshnikov had defected from Russia and Hines had defected to Russia from the United States. And they're independent. Their solo dancing is wonderful. But together, they're just fabulous, dancing on this large floor and sort of blending their two styles. So one thing I remember so much, though, is the Lionel Richie song, Say You, Say Me, which did end up winning an Oscar.
Say you. The way it should be. Say you, say me. Say it together. Truly.
The plot is sort of not as strong, but the dancing moves it along, and how they work out an escape plan with all these cameras and bugging devices on them. And through their dancing, they signal to each other and they devise a plan.
Talking about the 1985 movie, White Nights.
Well, this is like the musical version of Bridge of Spies, kind of. It's a Cold War espionage film. But really the most remarkable thing is just that it shows both Baryshnikov and Hines at the height of their powers. And seeing what tremendous dancers and athletes they are makes it pure pleasure.
So this is a film I was obsessed with. I'm not entirely sure why when it came out and when I got it on VHS tape and could watch it over and over again. But I really like what Ellen said, which is the plot, mediocre at best, but the dance numbers, because that's the history of so much of the musical genre. It's not about, like, we're going to make the best plot. It's about we're going to have these amazing numbers that are going to dazzle you and move you. And this is a perfect example of that.
It's also worth mentioning it has young, hot Helen Mirren in it, and it's introducing Isabella Rossellini.
1985.
This is Bobby Pittman calling in from Greensboro, North Carolina. And to me, Dirty Dancing is a really iconic dance movie just for the fact that every dance in that movie is iconic in its own right. Everything from the mambo to the rumba to the merengue to the little tap dance that the conductor does at the beginning. And for a movie with a budget of only $6 million, and it made over 200 plus million. It was really a smash hit when it came out in 87. Even to this day, to the point where it's replicated, some of the dance moves are replicated even in weddings and venues and shows and things like that.
How
so many lines that have been quoted and repeated from this movie. Of course, the most iconic line being,
"Nobody puts baby in a corner."
Dirty Dancing, dance films and movies on the radio.
I know.
Yes,
so.
Lake Gore. I think it's worth saying that, first of all, iconic is a word that can really be overused, but the dance sequences in this film, I'm totally on board with that. This is also a film that really changes depending what age you are, because when you're young, you say, "Oh, baby, she's got to break away from her family." And then when you are older and you're a parent of a teenager, you say, "Get that girl away from that sleazy old dance teacher." You completely change what side you're on. And I also want to give a special shout out to Dirty Dancing Havana Nights with Romola Garay and Diego Luna, who just last week, Awkwafina on her Comedy Central show said it was, without a doubt, the greatest sequel of all times.
Wow. One quick shout out, MTV. MTV is born in the 1980s. Michael Jackson, mm-hmm. all the videos that were just introduced, especially young people, to dance as this art form, I think are incredibly important. And you can certainly, some of the films we've been talking about, Flashdance and Footloose, I mean, I saw so many clips from those films as a kid on MTV.
It's a very symbiotic relationship.
Yep. Movies on the radio, it's all about dance.
Hi, this is Deborah Hilgenberg, and I live in Chapel Hill. And my favorite dance movie is Strictly Ballroom. It's an Australian movie made in the early 1990s. And I love it because it's not just a dance movie, but it's kind of a cult favorite. It's campy. It's a love story. It's a Cinderella story. And it's all about a young man who is trying to make his way in the very rigorous world of ballroom dancing.
When you dance your steps, I understand how you feel because I make up my own steps too.
You make up your own steps?
Yeah, and now we both haven't got partners.
Look, what are you carrying on about? You've never had a partner. You've been dancing with a girl for 2 years, haven't you?
Yeah, but...
And now you've come up to me, who's been dancing since I was 6 years old, and you say, "You want to dance non-federation and convince the judges at the Pan Pacific Grand Prix with 3 weeks to train?"
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Do you want to dance your own steps or not?
It's none of your business.
Well, do you?
It's a very loving film. It's about families who sometimes don't get along, but who ultimately love each other very much. And, it has a very feel-good, happy ending with everybody dancing together to the song Love Is in the Air. Love is in the air.
All right, you can sing along at home. Love Is in the Air. Strictly Ballroom is the film from 1992.
Project of director Boz Luhrmann, whose rural Australian family actually was very involved in ballroom dance, and he was a childhood ballroom dance champion. This was something that was workshopped through the stage to the movies to become a worldwide smash hit.
Yeah, this movie is tremendously entertaining, and it manages to be both a parody of like competitive dance culture and also like very loving about how moving dancing is, and it really treats the dancing scenes wonderful, I mean, you know, with great beauty and respect, even as it's being comic. So it walks a great line between them, and it has an aspect of Dirty Dancing, which is taking someone and turning them into the...
Well, this is a plot that's in a lot of these movies.
Right. Well, also the competition, the dance as competition,
right.
goes all the way back.
Why does somebody have to be a winner? Can't you just dance?
Oh, Laura.
30% of the films that were ever made about dance would never have existed.
You would give out all the prizes to all the kids, wouldn't
you? Yeah, for participation and getting your shoes on the right feet. Come on, here we go.
This is Bob Willie from Asheville. I am nominating the dance scene from Pulp Fiction, where John Travolta and Uma Thurman get up in a twist contest.
Ladies and gentlemen, now the moment you've all been waiting for, it's a world-famous Jackrabbit Slim's twist contest.
One of the things I like about it is how it's completely out of the blue. The first time you see the movie, you don't see it coming. It feels almost like a throwaway scene. I also like how it looks unrehearsed. Unlike most dance scenes in movies that are supposed to be spontaneous, they don't look spontaneous at all. This one does. This looks like two people who have not practiced, not even thought about dancing before, but they pick up on each other's cues and echo each other in a really beautiful way.
It was a teenage wedding and the old folks wished them well. You could see that Pierre did truly love the mademoiselle.
Also unusual for a dance scene in a movie, the two characters never touch each other. They come close, but they don't touch, and that, in a way, helps build the sexual tension between them even more than if they were embracing each other. And finally, the thing that works is that, from the viewer's point of view, we're aware of the echoes of John Travolta's career, that 15 years earlier, he had made his big break into movies with Saturday Night Fever and winning a dance competition. And here he is again, 15 years later, winning a dance competition in a movie.
Show you never can tell. They had a high-five, oh boy, did they let it play?
Pulp Fiction from, you know, here's the interesting thing that we got a lot of callers who wanted to name this movie as their favorite dance movie. And
yeah.
It ain't a dance. I mean, you know what
right.
I mean? But that scene makes it a dance movie.
It's a very memorable scene. And part of it is it interrupts this pretty complicated structure of a plot that's by and large very violent and, you know, has a lot of dark moments in it. And it's this moment of kind of relief and release. And so in many ways, that's what the musical numbers have historically done. It's just transporting it to this other context. And there is a kind of lineage. I think you could probably trace it back to A Clockwork Orange, to this very perverse version of Singing in the Rain, to the recent Joker film that has the really interesting dancing on the stairs sequence of directors using choreography and the dance genre to kind of in a dark context.
Yeah, I mean, even the inherent threat and violence in how they get up. I'm going to enter this contest.
Yes,
you
it's
are
a
going.
Threat.
I mean, you know, this
right.
is not the way.
It's very sinister.
Yeah.
You know, Pulp Fiction isn't a musical, but music is really important to Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
So,
good point.
Even the violent scenes have a score to them.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
This is Deb Dobbins. I'm from Durham, North Carolina, and one of my favorite dance movies is Shall We Dance, the Japanese version. I particularly like this version because I love the pacing of it, as opposed to a lot of films done in America and so forth, of which there's a very famous remake of this one. The pace is a much quieter, more easier pace, and I think it reflects kind of what this movie is about, which is Shohei Sugiyama, who's an accountant, and he lives his life in Japan, going to work and coming home, going to work and coming home. And one day he's on the train going home, and he's looking up through the window, and he sees a dance studio. And he goes to the studio, and he starts taking dance lessons. It really is stepping outside of where your comfort is. It's a rebellion of sorts of social norms in Japan, which I think most dance movies are a rebellion of social norms.
We'll be together with our arms around each other. Shall you be my new?
毎日見てるうちにあなたと一度でいいからダンスを踊ってみたいと思うようになった。
Shall we dance? Shall we dance? Shall we dance?
The 1996 Japanese film Shall We Dance? You know, another caller mentioned the 2004 American remake that starred Richard Gere and Jennifer Lopez. And again, some of the same themes coming. This kind of Walter Mitty, if anybody remembers Thurber, that kind of a theme is sort of running through this and how you break out.
Well, it's also because the physical release of the movement causes your mind to expand and take you to new places. And I mean, the salary man is, you know, very tight in his movements until he gets that release and it's transformative.
It's kind of interesting to think that the 1930s Warner Brothers musicals that we talked about in the beginning of the show, like Gold Diggers of 1933, they are all about the labor of dance, dance as work. And it's interesting to see the shift, and obviously it was happening in the 1930s. 1930s as well, to dance as release and dance as creativity. And I mean, this is like Saturday Night Fever, this film, right? In terms of like dance gives you this alternative identity that you can't have in your day-to-day life. It's an escape.
Well, in the Busby Berkeley movies, dance is your job.
That's
so
right.
You're working at it.
That's
but
right.
This is something that's a pleasure, so it's different.
Well, we just had a listener call in and talk about the Breakin films, Breakin 2 in particular, Electric Boogaloo, and the comment was, growing up in a small Midwest town, Breakin movies were a revelation. In a way of sort of.
And there are also these step up movies, which also is all about what you call vernacular dance.
Hi, this is Jamie Winchell from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And I like the movie Dance With Me because it's the only dance movie that ever really got me dancing. It was one of the first movies I saw with Cuban style salsa dancing in it. It stars Cheyenne, who I didn't know at the time is a very big international Latin singer, Latin star, and was in a boy band called Menudo, and Vanessa Williams. And it's a love story that really revolves around dance, Cuban-style salsa dancing. There are some fabulous dance sequences, really well choreographed, and a really nice dance soundtrack. But there's a scene in a dance club that looks really crowded. I mean, if you've never salsa danced, they can get very crowded, and they're bumped into, and Cheyenne says, "We have the whole floor."
No te sueltes demasiado.
Demasiada gente.
No es cierto. Toda la pista es nuestra. Con permiso.
And then the entire room starts dancing. It's like one giant couple with people interchanging, and it just makes salsa dancing look so fun that I started salsa dancing and moved to Miami as a result.
So there we go, an inspirational movie. I don't know how well this did at the box office. I don't know what kind of critical reviews it got, but it is inspiring, obviously. Somebody
I wonder how many people moved to like Pittsburgh because of Flashdance.
And you can hear in the background there the great Cuban singer Albita, who was very popular at the time as well. You know, obviously this was a movie that was meant to promote Cheyenne's career, although he doesn't do any singing in it, which is a mystery. The community of salsa dancing is really very powerful. And this dance where they all interchange with each other, there's a name for that, which I have forgotten. But that is a tradition to bring everyone in as one big happy family.
Yeah, and seeing all that together in one place is enough to inspire anybody to move. Now, here's another one, again, that you don't think of traditionally as a dance film, but obviously it played an important part.
My name is Samantha Swan. I'm calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And the dance scene that really spoke to me was from Little Miss Sunshine. I loved that movie. I knew nothing about it when I went to go see it. And I loved how it was a road trip and a family movie all in one. And the dance scene was so important. One is because she just lost her grandfather, who taught her all the moves for her dance and had been training her in her beauty pageant journey. And two, all of the family's hopes really hung on her. There was a lot of disconnect with the family, whether she should be a contestant in the Little Miss Sunshine contest when they got there, as she was not like the others. And her mother allowed her to go on and do her performance. And when she was getting booed because she was doing a striptease amongst all of these highly sexualized other little contestants, you do not expect that dance to come from her, and the support that the family gives her is incredible.
Get your daughter off this stage right now. Now.
So you laugh uncontrollably and cry at the same time.
Ready?
That's how that scene ends. Little Miss Sunshine.
By the way, if you were listening to that description, you haven't seen the film. It's really not a striptease. That makes it sound a little more tawdry than it is. It is. She is, in fact, doing some version of that. But this is Abigail Breslin in this breakout role in this film that's so charming. And she's this underdog. And she's just out there. And her sense of unfettered joy as she does this routine that is so unpolished compared to everything else that's going on in the room and the way her family tries to support her through it. I mean, it's just incredibly charming.
It is. I think it's funny that you hear the voice of Beth Grant there telling them to shut it down.
Yeah.
She's also in Dance With Me, so she obviously had like a little go through there.
Interesting.
But the beauty pageants are so sexualized.
Right.
And the fact that when she gets up there, she does a dance that's, yeah, I mean, overtly sexual,
yeah,
but yet they don't. But they don't want to
right.
acknowledge,
right.
you know, that they're
right.
really supporting this kind of sexualization. Of
it's the
girls.
Harper Valley PTA hypocritization of the contest that makes that one so great. We've got time for one more.
Hi, my name is Shali Comerford. I'm in Durham, North Carolina, and I'm the artistic director of Shali Dance Works. Probably one of the most influential films I feel in the past. Several years has been Pina, which was created by Wim Wenders and is about one of the most important choreographers of the 20th century, Pina Bausch, also the artistic director of Tanztheater Wuppertal. Her contribution to dance theater kind of changed the landscape, and Wim Wenders' documentary about her work and her life has brought that kind of dance theater into the mainstream. I feel like one of the most memorable moments in that piece is probably when you see a male dancer dressed as a ballerina on a railroad track, and just kind of the whimsy and sadness and I guess wonder that her work creates. She definitely pioneered a brand new genre of dance, and Wim Wenders caught it beautifully on camera.
2011 documentary Pina.
So when I saw this documentary when it came out, I had never heard of Pina. You know, I am not a dance aficionado. I don't go to a ton of dance performances, although I do go sometimes to the American Dance Festival that takes place every summer at Duke University. Excellent festival, highly recommend it. But I was so grateful for this introduction because Pina is this experimental, highly theatrical, exhilarating choreographer, immensely original. I mean, that's the thing. When you see choreography, you know, we talked about Bob Fosse before, you know, we talked about Jerome Robbins, but is so distinct to mm-hmm. that person. It could only be their choreography. It's just a revelation. So I highly recommend this
documentary. There are so many great documentaries about dance, a couple other recent great ones. Wendy Whalen, Restless Creature, which is about a prima ballerina dealing with issues of getting older and her body. And also, there's been a couple about Elizabeth Streb, who does these incredibly frightening, sort of almost Cirque du Soleil kind of risky things. It's really fun to be able to see those things on screen.
It was all about dance this month. Next month on Movies on the Radio, let's talk about movies that evoke one way or another a particular city or a place. We'll take cities. So movies about cities next time on Movies on the Radio with Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys. Marcia is a film professor at NC State, Laura film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art, and curator of the Movie Diva series. Laura's got lots of screenings coming up. I'll name a few, then go to our website. A Silent Version of Chicago on Wednesday, March 4th at the Carolina Theater, and The Great Buster at the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh, Sunday, March 8th. It's all at our website, stateofthings.org. Thanks so much for being with us this month, and we'll see you next month.
Thank you, Frank.
The State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Amanda Magnus, Grant Holub-Mormon, and Katie Barron. Jenny Lawson is our technical director, Josie Taras, our intern. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.